Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is show number 81. We are getting closer and closer to number 100, and what a celebration we will have that night. I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and with me is my co-host, Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing nifty. I went to Huntsville today for occupational therapy on my hands, something that I do a lot of. And driving back, I was noticing it was a beautiful sunny day. The mountains were all around me. A lot of flowers are blooming down here, crocuses and daffodils and things like that. Some of the flowering bushes are starting to bloom. And I looked at the dashboard. The temperature was 73 degrees. And I thought, well, okay,
wow.
This will work. I'll take this in a minute.
We had 48 today, so I can't complain. 48 in February in Michigan is nice.
It's, you see people out in their shorts in Michigan.
Yeah.
It's 48 in the springtime.
Shorts, sure. So.
It's like freedom. But it's been a pretty good week. I had tickets for a concert Sunday night. My lady friend had a emergency in her family, and she couldn't go, so I wound up going by myself. And it was Pat Metheny, one of the all-time greatest jazz guitarists ever. Man, he blew me away. But it was a cool thing was that it was an earlier show, 6 p.m. And it wasn't clear on the tickets to me, but what it was is if you were one of those people who makes donations to the Alice Stevens Center down there on the campus in Birmingham, and you become a patron, you know, then you get invited to special events. And an hour before Pat Metheny, they had a special event where the professor from the University of Alabama at Birmingham School of Music, professor in jazz studies, came out and did a 45-minute presentation, PowerPoint, video, audio, and everything like that on the history of the jazz guitar. And he ended with Pat Metheny, which was pretty cool. So it was a lot of fun. And those of you who aren't familiar with Pat Metheny, Last Train Home. Go check out his song, Last Train Home.
Yeah,
if you don't think that's one of the most beautiful songs you ever heard, you're not paying attention.
So that's cool. You go to a concert and you get your learn on as well.
Yeah.
All right.
So we've had some events this week with Abigail Hugini, who was our guest last week. And if you missed that show, please get over to the archives and check it out because it was an excellent interview. Very fascinating lady. And they had events in South Carolina this week, over the weekend, at the Gullah Gutchy Museum and in Green Pond and whatnot, and had huge crowds. People turned out. She sold all of her books again and placed another order. So, one's moving along. Do check out that show from last week if you missed it, though.
And speaking of that show, people are checking it out because at least this part of the archives on the Blog Talk Radio, that episode's doing big numbers. And so was the episode that we did where Stephen did the point of view. He taught a little bit about point of view and shared some things. Those two episodes are doing big numbers right now through the Blog Talk Radio site, but you can also find it on YouTube and several other places. We'll hit a bumper with that. But listeners, if you want to partake in tonight's program, call in with a question or a comment, here's how you can do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now and join us on air or tweet us with the hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body and we'll read your comment or question live. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group. Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
So, we got some good news. If you rely on any of the Ingram companies to do your book printing. That would be like Spark or Lightning Source, for example. They are back to 5-day turnaround for softcover books in bulk orders and 10-day turnaround for hardcover books, which is their standard promise, and they usually beat that. If they say 5 days, it's usually only a couple of days. So they are officially back to their standard turnaround times on book printing for the first time in quite a while. That is good news.
Yes, that is. And speaking of other good news, the Orc Federation by Robert G. Willicroft, is the ebook is in pre-sale and the print is populating. So get your butts over to Amazon and check it out.
Yeah. Now, Dr. Willicroft did find one more error. So we're going to delay another day or two on the print books, but you can get your pre-sale orders in on the ebooks right now. Go for it.
Go get them.
Check out scores of Fresh Ink Group book trailers in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube. Be sure to like, subscribe, share, and spread the word.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
All right. Now, that trailer playlist, there's a placard in today's newsletter. It says Trailer Binge, and it's got images of a whole bunch of trailers behind it. If you click on that placard, it'll take you straight to that playlist. And there's not all of the rest of the stuff in our channel, only the trailers are in that playlist. So if you want to just sit and watch some trailers, have some fun, make some popcorn, invite all your friends, and get down.
Yeah. So
our best-selling print books this week, I'm making a habit lately of before the podcast getting there and checking, seeing what's going on. And last week's guest, Abigail Hugenny, this week the best-selling print book for us is her book, There Must Be Something in the Water. And our second best-selling print book is the softcover edition of There Must Be Something in the Water. So Abigail Hugenny is tying down the top two slots again. And then Dr. Helen Burrell's American Agony has moved up to be just behind the softcover of There Must Be Something in the Water. In
hey,
fourth
Dr.
place. Hello Chattanooga by a TV broadcaster and radio personality and newspaper writer David Carroll. Hello Chattanooga, which is a great book. And then our fifth slot this week, another unlikely one moved up there and grabbed it, and that's The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant, which is the true story of a company that was founded in Fayetteville, Tennessee, and went on to do great things and then get caught up in scandals and, you know, a plane crash and people going to prison and, you know, things like that made it a little bit more interesting than, gee, we're just a construction company. But he put that book out in early 2018, I believe it is, and it's like 700 pages. And it's an expensive book because it's got color pictures and things like that. And all these years later, that thing is still, right now, our number five bestseller for the week.
Yeah, which is interesting because of all of these books, that top five, they're all nonfiction. There's there aren't any novels in there. So we got to start pushing some of these novels and compete with these nonfiction writers.
Yeah. And I would have thought the rise of the internet and trillions of websites would have really hurt that nonfiction book market, because you can look anything up on the internet now. And, you know, of course, nonfiction that's narrative memoirs and things like that, obviously not. But again, I'm surprised. Five nonfiction books. Can't argue with that.
No, you can't.
Check out freshinkgroup.com for everything publishing. Meet scores of authors. Discover hundreds of great books, plus audiobooks, podcasts, videos, trailers, free stories, free manuscript evaluations, and more. That's freshinkgroup.com.
Now, before we get
to
today...
You are listening to the Voice of Indie podcast.
Got to read your notes.
Yeah, before we get to today's guest, you've got some stuff over on Twitter if you want to grab some, Beam.
All right. hit the refresh.
You start with Marlena.
Marlena. So that's the first one, right? All right.
Yeah.
Marlena. Tune in to tonight's Voice of Indie podcast with the fellas of Fresh Ink Group, Beam Weeks and Stephen G is live now. Thank you, Marlena. We appreciate
yeah.
that. Verwayne Greenhouse said, we had a high of 82 here today. Stop bragging, man. Bragging's not cool. Compare that to the temp of 17 in my former UP town. I'd gladly have a suntan versus a skin burn from the frigid winds coming across Mama Superior. I agree with you, Verwayne. I would rather have that suntan, too.
Yeah, but the flip side of that is in a couple of months, it'll be about 140 degrees down there, and you'll have 3-foot-long palmetto bugs all over you. But
with 1,000% humidity.
At least. But, yeah, and Marlena's here in Alabama, too, so Marlena can vouch for my 73 degrees today. So I'll bet it was beautiful out there around Coleman. Good for her. Erwin Greenhoe also added, I bought Something in the Water in ebook, and I'm reading it now. Dr. Helen's book is next on my list.
All right. And Dr. Helen, speaking of Dr. Helen, she just dropped a tweet in there. She said, yay, Robert G. Willis-Croft has a new book coming out soon. He's a writer's writer, prolifically prolific. see its video, The Oort Federation to the Stars. And then she puts the link in there. Thank you for that, Dr. Helen. We really appreciate that.
Definitely. All right, so let's get to this week's guest, Carlisle Toms. This is the second time he's appeared on our show. We're having him back right now because we're in the process of putting out a book for him in the next couple of weeks. Carlisle Toms is a writer who grew up in rural Ozarks poverty. He completed his master's degree in 1981. He has written for different regional magazines and newspapers over the years and has often been selected to speak at both professional and non-professional events, as well as radio talk shows. However, he had never published fiction until completing his first novel in 2014. His general method for fiction has been to define a character and allow that character to tell his or her own story from first-person perspective, as though the character is writing an autobiography. Through his characters, he explores the psychology of the human condition, as well as the various elements and entanglements of personalities. His novels incorporate the social and historical influences surrounding the lifetimes of his characters and are stories of overcoming social, emotional, and spiritual challenges. His debut novel, Confessions from the Pumpkin Patch, won the 2016 New Apple Awards Medal for General Fiction as a coming-of-age story. Welcome to the show, Carlisle.
Welcome back, Carlisle.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So why don't you kind of refresh the listeners, where are you from, where have you lived, and where are you now?
I'm from northern Arkansas, right on the Missouri border, and I've lived in Nashville, Tennessee, and I've lived in Little Rock, Arkansas. I've lived in Missouri, and I'm now in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Fantastic. My grandfather was born in Missouri and at a young age moved to Mark Tree, Arkansas, and that's where he grew up until he came north after he started his own family up here to Michigan. I've been down there visiting when I was a kid, but I haven't been down there in a while.
Marked Tree is right in the general vicinity of the region where the character for the Calling Dream is from.
Well, how about that?
All around Jonesboro, eastern Arkansas, all of that. Pardon?
Fantastic. I said I still have kin down there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see him anymore, but I mean, I have relatives that still live down there, second and third cousins and... I think I have one of my grandfather's brothers is still alive as well.
We've got a Fresh Ink Group author in your area down there close to Corpus Christi too, Larry Landgraf, who's writes dystopian novels and biographical essays, and he's writing screenplays, doing a whole bunch of stuff. He wrote a book and then did a Spanish version of the same children's book. He's in Tivoli, which is there at the mouth of the Guadalupe River, probably, 15, 20 miles from you, I would think, something like that.
Actually, I don't know where that is, actually.
Hmm.
What's the name of the town?
Tivoli, T-I-V-O-L-I. And he's living right there in the Delta, kind of in the swamps. And if readers, if you're interested, he's got one autobiography that's full of stories about things that happened in the swamp. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Beam, you say we've got some people on the phone, huh?
We do. We have a couple of callers, so why not jump into that? We'll take the first caller. This is area code 501. Welcome to the show, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm Amelia from Nashville.
Hi,
Amelia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Do you have a question or a comment for Carlisle?
Yeah. I was just wondering, what is your writing process? When you sit down, how do you get into the flow of things?
Good question.
Well, actually, what I do, and I don't know how many writers do this, but I have these characters who come and pester me in my brain and want their story told, and I basically just sit down and let them tell their story. And so each novel is a different character who is telling their own story. All of them essentially are coming-of-age stories.
Wow. It must be like, do you ever feel a little bit schizophrenic having all those different characters in your head?
We all.
I probably am a little bit schizophrenic.
Now, are you a writer, Amelia?
I do it on my off time, but I wouldn't be so bold as to say that.
Okay, well, you never know. I mean, if you're putting stuff together, you know, hold on.
That's a writer. Yeah.
That's true. For now, I think I'll sit back and enjoy Mr. Tom's beautiful works.
Yeah, he's got a nice, almost literary, lyrical style, a narrative style that's easy to read, very enjoyable, and does a very good job reflecting the point of view of the characters. And point of view is very important in telling the story, because you need to see and interpret and understand what's happening the way that character does. And Carlisle's especially good at that. So I'm glad you recognize that, Amelia.
Absolutely. He has a very, like you said, lyrical style that I think is kind of a tradition of the South. Like, people kind of, they sing when they talk rather than, you know, it's hard to explain. It's almost like a type of music.
Yeah, it's got a cadence to it.
There, definitely.
Like a nice cadence, kind of.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I see it as nice now. When I was a kid growing up in Michigan, we'd visit my cousins in Tennessee, and I thought they were just, you know, so, it's like, what's the matter with you people? Can't you talk, you know? But, yeah, it is beautiful. Yeah, my cousin Melinda, she said, that dog went a-running one time, and we just made fun of her mercilessly. So how many of
my
books have you read?
Colloquialisms is, go ahead.
I was just wondering how many of your books she's read.
I have not read the most recent one, but I've read pretty much everything else.
Cool. Do you have a favorite?
Probably his original Confessions from the Pumpkin Patch.
All right. It's got a cool cover on it, too.
It does. Well,
just remember, Amelia, make sure you go and post reviews for all these books when you like them, especially on Amazon, because they really help indie writers out.
Yes, they do.
Did you have another question or comment for Carlisle?
Oh, no, sir. I'll let someone else take the floor, but thanks for letting me chime in.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for calling. Yeah.
No problem.
Thank you.
You guys have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
Now, before you take that next call, Marlena responded to what I said earlier on Twitter. She said, absolutely, Stephen. The weather has been beautiful this week. And speaking of beautiful, the Arkansas country of the Ozarks is breathtaking. I've visited a few times and am always happy to return.
Yeah, I remember down there, this is back in the 1970s when I was a kid, but man, yeah, it was beautiful. All right, so we'll go ahead and take this next caller. Hello, caller, welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name's Sean, and I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Hi, Sean from Los Angeles. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I had a question for your guest. I clicked on his bio, and he really does a lot of diverse things, like having written for magazines. He does art. He writes prose, some autobiography-style stuff. Is there a systematic way that you develop your projects? I like when people talk about their methodologies for when they build a story or a piece. I like to think each artist has a certain pathway and maybe a roadmap, and always fascinates me to hear about that roadmap that they use.
Good question.
Well, actually, I don't have a roadmap. My art, I basically sit down and I don't have a concept, and I put the pen to paper and allow it to do whatever it wants to do. Or I sit down with a canvas and acrylics and I allow it to do whatever it wants to do. I rarely ever have a concept ahead of time. With my writing, like I said, the characters come into my head, they pester me. They pester me to tell their story, and then I tell their story, and they're satisfied after that, as a general rule. And I have, right now, I have like four or five other characters in my head who are pestering me to write their story. And so far, I've only written two out of the six or seven. I'm not sure where all that will go or how long it will take, but I basically just kind of channel whatever they want to say and whatever story they want to tell.
That's pretty fascinating. I got to study improv a few years back, and they encourage kind of the same thing. You develop a character, and you just let the character have its own life. So do the characters go away after you've told their story, or are they still there?
Well, no, they're still there. They're still there. And I don't know. I don't know how long I'll live. I don't know. I'll be 99. And I've always joked that I'd be 125 laying on my deathbed and reach up and say, but I'm not done yet. So, I don't know, and there's a sequence to it. There's a sequence because each novel introduces another character, and the character that is introduced in that novel then becomes the protagonist of the next novel.
Interesting
concept.
So what you could do, has that been the case for everything?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I said, so has that pattern been the case for all your different writing? Like if you're, discovering a writing for a magazine, did you use that same approach?
No. I used to write for Recovery Times out of Memphis, and I had a monthly feature article with them. And what I basically did then is I wrote a story from my childhood that tied into a concept of addictions recovery, and would tell the story from my childhood and then sort of have a moral to the story related to recovery from addictions.
That's fascinating. Has that been a similar pattern that you've used in your books?
No, it hasn't been. With the exception that my next book, hopefully the next book, is The Gulls Are Always Laughing. And that's essentially my own story. And I go back to my childhood and take that all the way up through moving to Corpus Christi, having a very difficult move, and turning back to some of the spiritual practices that I learned in my adult life and using those spiritual practices to acclimate myself and get comfortable with that move. Basically, I moved here not knowing a single soul who was here. I moved here to get warm because I got to the point where I couldn't stand Missouri winters anymore. But it was a very, very difficult move. There were several reasons why it was a difficult move. And I had to turn back to a lot of the techniques that I learned to establish and maintain my mental health and my spiritual health. And so what came out of that was I would go walk on the beach or walk along the shoreline of the bay after I got home from work, and I noticed that the gulls always seemed like they were laughing. And I would listen to them. It's like they're laughing. They're laughing no matter what. They're laughing no matter whether you had a bad day. They're laughing no matter what's going on in the world. Listen to the laughter and be refreshed by that laughter. And so that's the concept of that, is looking at my childhood and difficulties in that leading up to making this move and being reminded by the gulls. Laugh. Think about it. Rejoice. Relax.
That's pretty awesome. How old were you when you moved? It seems you were very insightful. I assume you weren't a little kid at the time.
I was 60 when I moved.
Wow.
Wow.
And so
that's a bold step.
I had some tools under my belt.
I have a kid that's 14, and I don't think he's going to be as insightful in the next 2 years. I hope that he gets there.
Well, 14 to 16,
yeah,
a lot happens.
Yeah.
A lot happens.
A lot
and,
happens.
Just so you know, adolescence is a mental disorder.
It is.
It is.
Well, that's
all right.
Great. I appreciate your time. I don't want to take up the whole thing, but it's always fascinating when you see someone working in different mediums and how they get through on each of those mediums, because it seems like humans in general we're very singular focused, and to have someone with some diversity, it's very nice to get to talk to them and explore their brain and their methodology for doing different styles.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope that everything I write, whether it's fiction, of course, the only one that's not really fiction is The Gulls Are Always Laughing, which should be, God willing, will come out sometime this spring. But I hope that all of my books have some inspiration in them, and that the part of the idea behind the fiction is to emphasize that people do overcome.
Cool. Well, thanks for calling in. That was good conversation.
Yeah.
I appreciate the time, and I sure hope the book seems like a lot of us right now need a good device and stuff to help us overcome so much right now. So I look forward to reading The Gulls Are Always Laughing. I appreciate the time, gentlemen.
Yeah, and we encourage you to check out future podcasts and call in on some of those, too. We enjoy getting these calls. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, before we take another call, we do have a couple things.
Yeah, we do have
Twitter.
Another caller. Just hold on, and we will get to you. We're going to do some commercials.
Yeah. On Twitter, Marlena Smith says, schizophrenic is almost a perfect word for writers. Boy, I got to agree with that, Marlena.
Yeah, and what I was going to say was, that other caller just dropped.
Oh, no.
Call back. But I was going to say is, Carlisle, you're talking about having all these voices in your head and not having enough time. What you do is you put them all into one big story, and you call it Sybil.
You got to be a certain
you know
age
that
to recognize that.
That's one of my all-time favorite movies, and it was done, back in the 80s? Sally Field?
Oh, I think 70s.
Oh,
that was Sally Field.
Earlier than that. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe even late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, I'm thinking early 70s.
And that was, first of all, it opened up the whole concept in psychology of that the the fact that people can have multiple personalities. And they call it dissociative identity disorder now. And it basically is something that happens when people are horribly traumatized in their childhood, that they split. And they split in order to be able to cope with it all. And each one of those, the integration basically means that each one of those characters or those people who are in them sort of come together as one and work together kind of like a committee, I guess. But that splitting into different personalities is a way that people are horribly traumatized cope with it. But yeah, that's a fascinating story, fascinating book, fascinating movie. And
yeah,
God
I read
bless Sally Fields.
I read the book first
wrong.
And then saw the movie.
I'm looking at it now. It's a TV miniseries, and it aired in 1976 with Joanne Woodward, Sally Field, and Brad Davis. And you're right,
yeah.
That was pretty good. I remember enjoying that. So, Beam, you want to roll a couple of commercials, and then you say we've got a couple of callers, huh?
Hey, one dropped off, but maybe they'll come back, but we'll do these commercials.
All right. These are for Robert G. Willis-Croft.
Introducing book one in the new series by master sci-fi storyteller Robert G. Willis-Croft, Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle. Dying of prostate cancer, wealthy entrepreneur Braxton Thorpe is frozen in hopes of someday being revived and cured. That's when he discovers a threat to the entire solar system. But he has a problem. He's dead. He awakens to find himself uploaded into an electronic matrix. Exploring beyond the matrix and the larger global net, he discovers the Oort, a distributed electronic entity older than humanity, with an unnerving secret. Aliens wiped out nearly all life on Earth once, and they are coming back to do it again. The mathematical entity that is Thorpe has to find a way to convince humans of this threat, and in time to do something about it. But how? And what? Will Thorpe's carefully assembled team have any shot at saving the world? Will the Russians and Chinese help or betray? And who uploaded the cat? Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle, is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, all ebook formats, and now as an audiobook narrated by Trenton Bennett, including music and sound effects. Icicle, A Tensor Matrix is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. As the Oort Federation becomes a major force in the solar system, Braxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidor Orlov and his Udakhni Enterprises oppose their every move. While terraforming Mars for more living space, the Mars Reds prove formidable as resistors. If the Asterian Starship fighter pilots are released, will they align with Phoenix or Udakhni? And who will develop the right FTL technology? In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? Grab Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Oort Chronicle, and continue the journey with the Oort Federation to the stars. Proudly published in all print, digital, and sensory-enhanced audiobook by Fresh Ink Group.
All right. And that's second one's pre-sale ebooks right now and print books any day now. Get out there and get your order in.
Get out there and get them.
Now, before we take our call, I want to hit Twitter real quick here, Beam. Verwayne Greenho says, that's how I write. My brain is in the process for maybe 2 minutes tops. After that, my fingers take over. When I stop writing, my brain wakes up, and then I go back to see what my fingers have done. And Dr. Helen Burrell says, about Carlisle Tom's Fictioneer. His debut novel, Confessions from the Pumpkin Patch, won the 2016 New Apple Awards Medal for General Fiction as a coming-of-age story. Now, let us celebrate and celebrate his book. All right, and then, Beam, you got a question from Reese Delahanty. You want to take that one?
This is a question for Carlisle. It says, Carlisle, what is your position on the Oxford comma and the use of the ampersand in lieu of the word and? Ampersand iambic pentameter.
I don't understand what asking book about the iambic pentameter is about.
All I can say is read Shoots and Leaves.
That's Anne Lamott.
Yeah.
Is that
what
who wrote
that?
What's Anne Lamott?
The name of it? It's the panda on the cover.
Yeah, I'm
still learning. And one of the things that I find is that, okay, I'm learning, and then people tell me, oh, well, they changed that. And it's not the same anymore. You don't use that punctuation anymore. It's like, can we decide on something and stick with it?
Yeah, I don't think there's much debate there. The Chicago Manual of Style has come down for the Oxford comma. There's just too many examples where it doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you've got a phrase, you say two dogs, comma, Fido and Ruff. Now, is that saying three things or four things, two dogs and Fido and Ruff, or is that saying Fido and Ruff are the name of the two dogs? And the answer is the Oxford comma. Without the comma, it means the dogs are named Fido and Ruff. With the comma, you're talking about four beings, two dogs and a Fido and a Ruff. It's obvious. It's just, I don't see where there is any debate. Oxford comma all the way.
On Oxford comma. Now, yeah. Dr. Helen Burrell also had another comment on here. She says, schizophrenia is not split personality. It's a sick brain producing voices, instructing the
patient.
The patient what to do, often scary things, making the patient paranoid. Multiple personality disorder, dissociative identity is not schizophrenia. And she's got a website,
right.
Dr. Helen, at psychdocnyc.com. psychdocnyc.com, and that is a site that was built by Fresh Ink Group.
Yeah. So you got a call?
She's right.
We got a call.
Totally different diagnoses.
Yeah.
Yeah, and schizophrenia is a wide basket, too. A lot of things fit into it.
All right, we're going to go to the phone here. I got this spinning thing. Hello, caller. How are you doing? Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello,
caller.
Hi. Talking to me? Hello?
Hi.
Welcome to the show. What's
your
name and where are you calling from?
My name's KK and I'm calling from Columbus, Ohio. How's everyone doing?
Well, hello, KK. Welcome to the show. We're doing fine.
Great.
You have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I have a question for Carlisle. What is your editing process for your novels?
Go over and over and over and over it, and then you'll still find mistakes.
So do you go chapter by chapter or delete scenes? What do you do?
Well, one of the things that I do is that I like to have someone edit it for me, you know, and then I go over that. Yeah, I don't entirely trust myself when it comes to punctuation and that sort of thing. I don't entirely trust myself with it. So I need somebody, you know, I tell the story, but I need somebody to say, you know, it's sort of like what Stephen said a minute ago. Do you mean this or do you mean this? And I may not know exactly how to clarify that at the time that I'm writing the story. I'm just telling the story. The first thing I do is I just tell the story. And then I go back over it and I think about punctuation and I think about, usually spelling's not an issue, thank God for spell check. And I go over it and I think about how do I want this to come across and how do I want this sentence to be structured. most of the time when I write, I'll write a chapter, and then after I write the chapter, I'll go back through it. And as I go back through it, then I think about the structure of the sentences, and then I think about punctuation and those sorts of things. And, you know, even then, you know, you write the whole doggone book, and you go back over it, and you go, ah, I missed that.
Is that a question, KK?
Yes, yes. One more question for you, Carlisle. The Calling Dream cover of the Calling Dream, did you design that or?
I designed it and then artists tweaked it. Basically,
okay.
the cover of it is a woman on the cross and he's kneeling before that because essentially what he is doing with his sexual addiction under the guise of his religious cover is that he is sacrificing women to his addiction.
And KK, you haven't seen it yet, but we had our staff digital artist repaint that cover. So when the new edition comes out in the next couple of weeks, you're going to see a new cover. It's the same kind of image, the woman on the cross and the kneeling man or whatever, but we slicked it up a bit just for you,
okay.
KK.
Looking forward to seeing it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling,
thanks for calling in, KK.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Good evening.
Yeah, now over on Twitter, Reese Delahanty posted again and admitted it's Robert McKenzie using one of his gnome de plumes.
Yeah, I knew that. I get his tweets all the time.
I didn't know it was him, but
oh, you
not
didn't
surprised.
Know?
No. But we need to run some commercials here, and I think it's a good time to run The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms.
Well, why not?
In 1945, 10-year-old Ronald Dennison, the son of a backwoods Arkansas preacher, began having profound dreams about religion and a strange red-haired woman. The dreams follow him for decades, with the woman sometimes seducing him, other times calling him to become a televangelist, but eventually berating him for his sins of lust. She holds a secret so dark that he dares never admit it, even to himself. The more famous and wealthier he becomes, the more he struggles with his adultery, his fetish, and his shame, until his torment can no longer be contained. Staggering revelations challenge everything he ever believed. Will truth bring him the peace he always craved? Or will the woman's demands prove more than he can bear? Read the novel, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms.
All right.
Now, that new cover that I mentioned to KK is in today's newsletter. If you scroll down near the bottom where we have a sample from the book, and if you haven't read that sample, check it out. And then below that is the new book cover, the one that'll be posted sometime in the coming weeks.
Yeah, cool. So where do we want to pick these up from?
How about even? Daniel Woodrell?
I was just looking at that and thinking,
yeah,
Daniel
we were talking to Carlisle yesterday, and since he's, you know, from the Ozarks, we mentioned Daniel Woodrell, who is one of our all-time favorite authors and
just a fantastic
from the Ozarks,
writer.
And he tends to place his stories in the Ozarks, like Winter's Bone and Tomato Red, for example. And Carlisle had some familiarity with that production of Winter's Bone. Can you tell us about that, Carlisle?
Yeah, actually, I lived in the same city as Daniel Woodrell
before
I moved to Texas. And the film Winter's Bone was filmed around there, which Winter's Bone, if folks don't know about that, it was nominated for several Academy Awards. It was Jennifer Lawrence. I think it launched Jennifer Lawrence's career.
Yeah.
And
she was
nominated for best actress in that.
Yeah, she was on Bill Engvall's sitcom before that. And that boy, what a difference in her career that movie made.
Yeah. Yeah. So Daniel Woodrell is from the West Plains area, and he writes about the Ozarks as well, writes several books about the Ozarks. You know, one of the things he wrote about was a big explosion that occurred in the 1920s in which multiple people were killed, and the small town in the 1920s, that town would have had to have been around 4,000 or 5,000 people at the max. And it's like 12,000 to 14,000 people now. And so it's a very small town in the Ozarks, and he has written about that for a long time. Winter's Bone is a wonderful story. And the Meredith Sisko, who worked with Winter's Bone, she did a lot of the music for the soundtrack of Winter's Bone, and she's a writer herself, and she had done an endorsement of my first novel, Confessions from the Pumpkin Patch. So I was very, very lucky to get her to review that book and give me an endorsement on that. So she's from that area as well. And so that whole region was where I was actually born in Arkansas, but West Plains is just over the border into Missouri. It's like 20 miles from the Arkansas border. And so when they came and filmed that, they filmed it all around that area.
Beautiful area.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, you know, and another favorite from that movie, from Winter's Bone, is the incredibly underrated Dale Dickey.
Dale Dickey.
She is a fantastic actress. She just has that face that looks like she's seen trouble for a long time. And
She's been in everything, too. She's been in everything. If you're watching a movie, scroll to the end. We'll check those credits. She's in there somewhere playing something.
She was in Breaking Bad. She was in Justified.
Yeah, and Winter's Bone had another notable one, too, and that's John Hawkes, who I believe won the Oscar for that, playing Teardrop. And, man, he did another performance that'll just blow you away. That's just a great film, easily in my top 20. 25.
Yeah.
Great book,
yeah.
Great writer. So, yeah, it's a fun story. Now, you said that the woman that you know was involved in doing the song that's in the movie where she goes and visits the neighbors.
She did several pieces of music in that movie. You know, she did a rendition of Farther Away, which is an old hymn, and did kind of a different version of that. But she has Blackberry Winter, which is her, that's her website, and she has the band Blackberry Winter. And, but yeah, she did several of that. She did some, they had her in the movie as well. And so, I mean, if you go to, you go look up the soundtrack for Winter's Bone, you're going to find several songs in there by Meredith Sisko.
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah, I especially like that scene where she goes to confront the people that she thinks killed her father. And when she goes in there, they're basically having a social evening, and they're all sitting around doing a local song, you know, one of the hill songs from the Ozarks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's authentic, and it's perfect, and it's beautiful. And I mean, and these are not pretty people to look at. These are people that look like they've been out working in the holler all day long and then came in that night and you know, sitting around and singing some songs and just being social. And it was so authentic. I just thought it was beautiful.
Well, there's actually quite a bit of that goes on up there. And there are people from in the music industry who are from that. Porter Wagner is from there as well. And for folks who don't know Porter Wagner, he had his own show back
TV
in the
show.
60s.
Yeah.
With
Dolly.
And he basically launched Dolly Parton's career.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then that was in the late 70s, he went into bankruptcy. And Dolly bought his music catalog for $1 million, and she held it for a few years and then turned around and gifted it back to him.
Wow.
That's what a sweetheart of a person Dolly is.
There are so many Dolly Parton
stories. Yeah. She's an amazing person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got.
I just
I got
don't
to see
think that
perform.
She belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
No. No.
She's up for that, and I just she's not rock and roll. She's never done a rock and roll album or song.
No.
She's in the Country Music Hall of Fame. That's good. That's where she needs to be. But you know.
Although it's hard to tell her from Jay-Z sometimes, you know. So Beam, you want to run a couple of commercials, and because we're running down on our time here.
Yeah.
Fresh Ink Group presents Volunteer Bama Dog, a TV Guy's love letter to the South. I'm David Carroll, longtime Chattanooga broadcaster. Volunteer Bama Dog is a collection of my stories shared on TV, in newspapers, and online. From growing up in an Alabama country store to a long career in radio and television, I'll introduce you to the kinds of Southern characters we've all known or wish we knew. This collection of humor, history, trivia, and heartfelt memories serves up more than 60 essays. Drawing from my experiences with news, music, and entertainment, Volunteer Bama Dog is both educational and fun. It offers behind-the-scenes commentary on how we cover and deliver the news and on the music we grew up with. Among the book's highlights is a series of stories that recall Southernisms or the Appalachian English that generations of Southerners still quote to this day. I try to bring that language to life, hoping you'll say, "I knew people who said that," or, "Wait, he's been listening to me." This follow-up to my first book, Chattanooga Radio and Television, is more of a personal account of my experiences with those many wonderful people I've met and even worked alongside over the years. I hope you'll join me as Volunteer Bama Dog celebrates the stories and people of the South. Volunteer Bama Dog is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and ebook formats, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Volunteer Bama Dog is proudly published by The Fresh Ink Group. Hello Chattanooga, famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley, features photos, stories, and complete listings of the entertainers, athletes, political leaders, and others who visited the area since 1900. Chattanooga has attracted some of the best-known celebrities in the world, thanks to our city's historic venues, beautiful scenery, and powerful people. Hello Chattanooga features hundreds of restored photos, behind-the-scenes stories, and thousands of fully indexed entries spanning more than 700 pages. I'm David Carroll. I've worked in Chattanooga television and radio for more than 40 years. I also write a weekly newspaper column and have written two other books, Chattanooga Radio and Television, A Photo History of Chattanooga Media, and Volunteer Bama Dog, A TV Guy's Love Letter to the South, a collection of my most popular stories. Hello Chattanooga is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in a keepsake, jacketed, hardcover edition with full-color interior printing, softcover with black and white photos, and all-color ebook formats worldwide. Take a trip back in time, enjoy great memories, and maybe even settle an argument as you learn the dates and places that your favorite star, athlete, or president visited the Chattanooga area.
All right.
fun cool books, book. Those. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. So,
Carlisle, we're showing on Amazon that you've got The Gulls Are Always Laughing, Confessions from the Pumpkin Patch, and then The Calling Dream, which a new edition of that is coming out pretty soon. Are there any others that you have out there for sale right now?
I don't have any others for sale. I'm currently working on the fourth novel, and that protagonist is introduced in The Calling Dream.
Well, tell us about
it. The protagonist of the fourth novel is basically Ronald Dennison, who is the sexually addicted preacher. He gets called by a minister in St. Louis who says, "Can you come, when you come to do your presentation up here, can you talk to this boy? He's in Christian foster care, and he thinks he's a girl. And he likes your broadcast, so maybe you can turn him around." And so he comes to talk to this kid, Stephen, walks in at 10 years old in the slums of Pruitt-Igoe in St. Louis, Missouri, to find his heroin-addicted mother stabbed to death. She then gets placed into Christian foster care, where they're more interested in convincing her that she's really a boy and that she's not a girl than understanding the fact that she went through this horrible trauma of having a heroin-addicted mother, a single mother in the first place, and then walking in at 10 years old and finding her stabbed to death. And so there's an old woman up the hall, Miss Maddie, old black woman, who is the only person who has her back, person who loves her unconditionally. And when she's placed in foster care, she's removed from Miss Maddie. And Ronald goes in thinking, oh, well, I'm going to fix this boy. And he ends up being enlightened by this kid. But one of the things that he does is he takes the kid to meet Miss Maddie and to see her again, because the kid hasn't seen her in over a year and she was the only person he had. And he's then touched to the point that he says, you know what, I'm going to set up a trust fund and I'm going to figure out a way for this kid to be reunited with this old woman who loves him unconditionally, loves her unconditionally. And so this is Stephanie's struggle from 10 years old, growing up in the slums of Pruitt-Igoe, struggling with the 1970s attitudes about transgender, and struggling with people who want her to be this way or that way, and find, you know, connecting with the one person who loves her. And so this eventually comes into her dedication that she's going to find the person who murdered her mother. And the person that was convicted of murdering her mother, she knows did not do it. And so that's sort of basically the story, that she's determined to find that person who actually did murder her mother.
Wow. How far along are you in writing this?
I'm about 15 chapters into it at this point.
Wow, steady progress.
Yeah, I'm thinking that there's like one or two chapters I may go back and either delete or shorten and place some of the information into other chapters rather than having a couple of them as separate chapters. You know, I think one of the things that Stephen King says is that you need to go back and eliminate what's not necessary.
Yeah.
And so, you know, after writing the story, you know, then go back and sort of trim it. And there may be some things out of that particular novel that I will trim over time. It's like, is that really necessary to the story? And if it's not really necessary, then, you know, that story can tell itself without certain aspects. There are a few things that I think I just like, it's just not really necessary, that I've written in there, and I'll go back and rethink.
That's a good attitude to have. I mean, that's Stephen King on writing. That's where he brought that up. And I practice that, because there's some stuff that I read. Yeah, that sounds cool, but it's not necessary. So
yeah,
I'll eliminate it, cut it out. Now, if it's really cool, I'll put it into another folder and, you know, maybe it fits in somewhere, some other story, some other time. But if it doesn't fit into this story, it's got to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm working on becoming a better writer.
Yeah. That's a process that should never stop.
Yeah. Quick thing here on Twitter, Robert G. Willis Croft, he says, I'm just lurking and enjoying the conversation. Welcome, Robert.
Yeah, but we can see the bubbles coming up to the surface. We know where you are. So it sounds like you're making steady progress, and maybe we could be shooting for this later this year, maybe in time for a Christmas release, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if I'll get it done this year or not. It just depends on how much time I can get to devote to it. But the next thing that I actually want to do is to go through, and I'm sort of revising the first book. And so actually, you know, getting that republished in a new sort of a new version of it.
Yeah. So, since we've just talked a little bit about, you know, eliminating what's not necessary, do you have any other advice for up and coming authors, as we had one that called tonight?
Well, geez, stick with it. Don't give up.
Geez is sticking with
it.
You
know, yeah. Yeah. I've got a placard that I got from someone that I knew back, geez, when I was in college. And it basically says that persistence is omnipotent. That there are people who are talented who are derelicts, and there are people who are educated who are derelicts, and there, you know, are people who have all of these things going for them, but if they don't have persistence and commitment, they're not going to get there. Essentially, the basic formula for success is persistence plus commitment equals success. And so I think, you know, and you always have to be willing to look at yourself and say, could I do better?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So how do people find you, Carlisle? Say if someone wants to send you a note or check out website, blog, Instagram, anything?
Well, I'm on Instagram and on Twitter as @Carlisle_Toms.
You want to spell those?
And my, KARLYLE_TOMMS.
Two M's.
And then my website is CarlisleToms.com. Same spelling. So that I can be found on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and some things that I don't pay much attention to anymore.
I got a whole bunch of those.
Yeah, that's easy. But, and of course, listeners, we have a contact form at freshinkgroup.com. So if you're ever trying to track down any of our guests, just send us a note and we'll make sure they hear about you.
Definitely.
So, Carlisle, it has been a hoot having you on again. We're looking forward to
getting that
new book out, the Calling Dream, the new version of the Calling Dream, and look forward to seeing what else that you come up with this year.
Well, I ain't quitting.
Good for you.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah. So thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out on your Wednesday to spend it with us and our listening audience. Thank you to the callers as well. Always good to have the callers chime in with questions and comments. And
yep,
thank
definitely.
You to everybody on Twitter as well.
Yeah. Now, as we wrap up the show here, I did want to mention I went and saw the movie Moonfall this week. And it's a good science fiction movie. And Dr. Willis Croft, it's got a digital cat in it.
Yeah,
a digital cat and a whole bunch of cool things in the story and some of the worst dialogue writing I have ever seen in my life. It is bad dialogue. They give lines to Halle Berry that she should have embarrassed to let come out of her mouth. I'm serious. Bad dialogue. Good story, bad dialogue, kind of worth seeing. So that's Moonfall. But at any rate, next week we've got Frankie Ray. Frankie Ray is singer-songwriter based in the Tampa area. She's going to come on, share some of her music with us, and tell us her story. And then after that, Beam?
After that, we've got A.K. Aulis. He's an Australian Aussie writer. G'day there. He'll be on calling us from the day after.
Yeah.
We'll be live, but he'll be in the morning on the next day when he calls us. So tune in for that. That should be really cool.
And then after that, Patricia A. Guthrie, who we've had on the show once before, she'll be a repeat guest. She's got a new book coming out, a collection of short stories called Eerie Charms of the Short Story. And we look forward to having a talk with her. And then after that?
After that is Missouri author D. Ike Horst. That's D, the initial D, Ike, and the last name is Horst. He's, like I said, he's a Missouri author, and we're just getting to know him, so... We're going to introduce them to you, the listening audience. So tune in for that one.
Yeah, we do want to mention, too, that on March 23rd is our crossover day. Robin Joan Carter, and there's a typo in today's newsletter and called him Ron, and I meant to fix that and spaced out, and I didn't, but it's Rob and Joan Carter. They have their own video podcast called Meet the Author, and they interview authors each week on Wednesday evening in the hour slot before our podcast. So on March 23rd, I am going to be the guest. Stephen Gies will be the guest on Meet the Author with Robin Joan Carter. And as that podcast ends, I'm immediately clicking over to start hosting this podcast with Beam, and they will come in a couple of minutes later, and Robin Joan Carter will be our guests that night. So it's bordering on incest. We're all going to be looking out for each other that night and doing some crossover, having some fun.
Sounds interesting doings, okay? So tune in for the shenanigans.
Thanks, everybody, for calling tonight, for sharing your thoughts on Twitter. And those of you who called in, we encourage you, call in again on another show. Make this a regular thing. We look forward to hearing from you. And thank you, Carlisle, for coming on again. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Carlisle.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll see everybody next week.
Later.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.